Well, we'd like to welcome you back to listen to another hour about Nikola Tesla.
Our website is hello-earth.com.
And today is Thursday, the 4th of June, 2009. And this is hour three with John McGinnis. He was the director of the Tesla Museum for 14 years in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And Mr. McGinnis heads up the American Tesla Society. Calling in from Colorado Springs. Hello, John.
Hello, Curtis. How are you today?
Oh, good.
Well, it's good. A beautiful day out here. It's maybe going to rain, maybe a little crack of thunder and a little flash of light, and that's what I love about Colorado Springs.
Well, that's the lightning capital, almost the lightning capital of the world, I guess.
Yeah, the second most. I do notice every year, you know, somebody gets it. But it's surprising, a lot of them walk away. You know, they either didn't get hit quite directly, there was a little distance or something like that, and they're just lucky to be alive.
Well, just as long as they're not standing on a real negative, real ground.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll attract it and so forth. In fact, the Nikola Tesla invented a lightning rod, and it's probably the best one ever made. We all think of the Franklin rod that our beloved Benjamin Franklin invented, but the way Tesla did it is he let it build potential, so it would just actually reach right out there and grab the lightning even before it would discharge. Mm-hmm. So it was a different theory. It was both effective, but I think it can be said that Tesla's is a better one. They use them at the power plants here in Colorado Springs, so a little bit has rubbed off in our community, and I'm glad to see it.
Okay, well, stay a little close to that microphone.
Okay.
So there you go. So I don't have turn that volume up. That sounds better.
Okay.
So you're in Colorado Springs, and Tesla came out there in the late 1800s.
Yeah, he came out in 1899. He came out here originally to harness lightning. But because lightning is so ungovernable, you can't get it to do the same thing twice or to count on it to discharge when you want it to. It was just too difficult a task. But he did want to innovate the wireless transmission of electricity, and he did that. And in fact, I don't believe I spoke about it earlier, and I will give you some thoughts on that so you can understand a little better.
Okay, great.
Of what he was doing, but it was such a monumental accomplishment. And of course, you have people that say, well, I don't believe he did it. Unfortunately, we don't have the records like we do nowadays, although he did have witnesses there that were from the New York Times and the Denver Post newspaper out here. But there were several other newspapers involved at the time. And they had sent people out there, but there's no real accounting as to who actually came. But the newspapers themselves were well known, the Denver Post being a big one, the New York Times being huge. And there were, I believe, the Los Angeles Times and a few others were here. I haven't seen any hard evidence from the point of view of an article written about it. But it was mentioned in the notes of a gal that did some record-keeping with Tesla. She was a reporter with the Gazette Telegraph out here. So I don't think they were hiding anything, but may have found it to be a boring story, or maybe not, maybe too complicated to publish it and expect people to understand it. So a lot of different things came on, but when this gal had mentioned it, and it will be documented in my book, you'll be able to follow it up a little bit closer. Now, the thing that I'd like to point out is, as Tesla was out here and he tried to harness lightning, he came upon it being an impossibility. But while he was here, he took advantage of the location. Not only was it a lot of lightning here, but it's a semi-arid environment. And that has a lot to do with the conductivity of the soil itself. There's a Pezel effect that happens when we have a lightning bolt strike the earth. It spreads all out, and when it does that, there are some chemical responses, the main one being nitrogen. And nitrogen, as we all know, is the food of the plants. So lightning has a very strong role to play in our day-to-day environments. It not only provides the moisture, but it also provides the food that plants need. So just one of those interesting things about lightning, and I could see why Tesla got involved with lightning and wanted to do something about it. I have heard that in this day and age, there's a scientist out in California. His name is Larry Spring. He does have a website. Larry has thought about harnessing lightning himself, but he would do it by using vast amounts of these car batteries and then putting them in circuit and using them to be the buffer when the lightning strikes, being a huge quantity of electricity to dissipate it and to send it into the circuitry. It is a very tricky thing to do, but Larry Spring is very wise about those things, and if anybody would figure it out, he certainly would, but it would not be an easy thing to do. Well, the other thing I wanted to talk about today was the way the climate was. By that I mean, what were the social rules? How were people getting along with each other? And in New York City, it was an area where there was a lot of competition. There's no joke to that slogan, if I can make it there, I can make it anywhere. That's probably true, because New York is not a an easy place to survive in, but if you learn to do it, why, you have achieved something that will go well with you if you ever go somewhere else to do it again. But there was camaraderie. There were factions. There would be an Irish section, an Italian section, a Polish and Scandinavian, so on and so forth. And these people would be putting their heroes up. Now, at that time of the century, the very end, in the 1890s, they called them the Roaring 90s, they would take somebody from a culture, let's say it was Italian and he was a fighter, well, he would be the symbol for that particular, I can't say race, but I can say, you know, the collection of these different cultures. Mm-hmm. So there was a pride that went on with it. And, of course, Tesla brought about these yearnings to be smart. It wasn't a physical thing that he was known for. It was his very deft ability to solve problems and invent things. So he had a lot of contributions that were going on, but he had changed the thinking. They were moving off of going into, let's say, the baser types of occupations, like boxing or something like that, something to do with athletics. And then here we have Nikola Tesla that's doing it because he can solve these problems that come up. And believe me, at that time, there were a lot of them. And he was a bright star amongst the Slavic communities and the Slavic people themselves. He had hooks with Serbians, but he also was connected with the Croatians. They've had some strong rivalry between the two, but currently things seem to be okay. But as with anything, there is always some sort of rivalry that occurs, and people like to put their best foot forward and become the darling of whatever it was. Well, Tesla inspired a lot of people, and he had that down-home atmosphere as well. He got on radio with Fiorello LaGuardia, and when they had the New York newspaper strike, well, he was reading the cartoons right with the mayor. Well, at that time, the cartoons were a big part of the life of youngsters, and that would be their big entertainment, preceded the cartoons and everything else that follows. But just the idea of doing something that is a charitable act and is accepted and enjoyed by those that participate is something. But it's kind of the cut of the man. He was down to earth with people. I don't think he was the comic of the party or anything like that, but he would be the kind of guy that would come to the gathering, and he would be sober but not dour. He would like to talk about the things that he was working on, and gosh knows he had a lot of things that he was working on, and he never stopped inventing things until 1928. That's when he stopped filing for patents. He wanted to refine his pet projects. And, of course, we had World War One. World War Two was starting to be fomented in Europe. And people cannot help but see that going on. So what does he do? Well, he wants to bring war to an end by having such a strong weapon that nobody would dare try to invade the country. But the weapon itself would be such a hard thing to mobilize that they would set it up at one particular place, and that would be it. So it has some pretty good benefits to it. But there were the drawbacks as well. Now we're in a different time, and that is we're in the atomic age. We have people that are concerned about somebody getting a hold of a loose nuclear weapon and carrying off some dastardly deed. And the consequences are so heavy that we have to be careful of that. But when they were developing that, they had called in the best scientists in the country. And Albert Einstein was one of them. Tesla got an invitation, but never was serious about working with a group of scientists. He was a lone eagle. He liked to do it on his own, and I know a lot of people like that. It's not an odd thing at all, but in this lifetime, he always had people that were trying to second-guess him why he was doing this or doing that. Well, people don't do that unless you're popular or you have a very interesting life, and Tesla did. So he became somebody that was worth watching. And there was no doubt about it. He was out there, and he was doing his thing. He would go over to Central Park. They had the big pond there where they float the boats and so forth. And he himself had gotten his ideas about remote control just while gazing at that collection of little sailboats running here and there. If anything, if they were powered, it was something that would be wound up. If there was a battery mechanism, it wouldn't last too long. At that stage, the windings and so forth, they probably didn't learn a lot about them, but as time went on, they got better and better at it. And so he was picking up from the elements around him and the personalities around him. Mark Twain, as I said, was one of his best buddies, but there was another fella. His name was Jesse James, the outlaw. Jesse James had gone to New York. As a matter of fact, one of his sidekicks, Cole Younger, went there as well to become writers. I mean, what is this? Go after a lot of people in the Wild Wild West, and then suddenly you're a changed person. It's an amazing thing that was going on. But Cole Younger stayed, but Jesse went back, and there is some question as to whether or not they really found his body or if it was somebody else's body. It's a mystery, and it's a lot like Tesla, who had a lot of mysteries. His idea of a good time would be to go out for dinner with a lot of fellow scientists and talk about things. What did you invent this week? What did you discover? And Tesla was very strong about the idea of inventing. He said he didn't invent anything, that all he did was discover that which is already there. So there's a lot of strange things about him, but when you think about it, it's just a kind of a common thing. So here I was going to be talking a little bit about the fire there in Menlo Park. It burned for about 3 days, just really out of hand. Edison and his wife got out of it just in the nick of time. But I don't think it was one of these things that was an accident. I think it was on purpose. They had these, as I began to talk about, they had these stars of a certain culture. And when people would see that they got picked on, they would, from time to time, make a move on it. It's a very plausible thing. And I know that the Edison fire never was solved. And I'm just thinking it was such a torrid fire, burned for so long. I forget how many dozens of buildings were destroyed, but a lot of them. So that isn't something that just kind of spreads like a forest fire does. So, you know, you got to think that maybe, just maybe, somebody was trying to even the score. Mm-hmm. It was about 5 or 6 years after they had gone after Tesla's laboratory. They burned it out one time. So is there competition? Is there things in life that are pretty rough and tough? And, of course, the answer is yes. I don't like to think of anybody doing a cruel act or an underhanded act, but the culture of the time would dictate behavior like that. So that's all I'm going to say about it, but there'll be more about that in my book when I get it out. I'm sure you'll want to be checking in on it. The other thing about Tesla that I think was worth mentioning was his ties with Samuel Clemens or Mark Twain. He got his idea for getting to the people through Mark Twain, who would do some of these readings, and he would be in a parade of luminaries that would star at Madison Square Garden. And then Tesla saw himself wanting to demonstrate some of his technologies. One of them was his suit of fire. This was a suit that was especially made for him. There was a seamstress there in Manhattan who had sewn all of these conductive strips into this suit. And what Tesla would do is get on and be isolated, but he would be on the plate of his large coil. When they would throw the switch, even with all the lights turned off, he glowed like an angel. These were the accounts of people that went to these shows. And nowadays, we go to similar things when we go to see a magician or maybe a high wire act or something like that. There's something about being there and witnessing at that range that really has a lot of impact. I don't think we quite have that kind of thing anymore. We flip on a television tube and, by gosh, we can have the whole world right at our viewing pleasure, but being there, I think, does add a dimension that you just don't get otherwise. So Tesla would use that type of environment to demonstrate his inventions. He had his, one of the favorite ones that he did was they had a pool. It was about 75 feet long, about 4 to 5 feet deep. And they located it in the middle of the arena, or in the middle of Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. And it was in this type of tank where Tesla would put his remote-controlled vehicles. He had a submarine that would it would dive, it would rise again. It had an antenna on it, of course, that was very noticeable. And it would shoot around that particular tank, and people would be given an opportunity to use the joystick, because that's what he did. He had a joystick, and he would make that submarine go anywhere that he wanted it to go. So when he would hand that off to somebody right in the audience, you can imagine the thrill of getting something like that.
I mean, it really proves that there was nobody inside the vehicle.
Oh, yeah, that's another thing, yes.
I don't know how big it was, but maybe a midget or someone could sit in it, and people just couldn't believe their eyes.
Yeah, I'll be posting a picture of that on my website. But one of the other pictures that I haven't gotten on there yet, but it's a picture of the Wardenclyffe Tower, just about one-fourth of the way down when they were taking it down. That's one that I really don't see on the web very much, but what I want to do with the American Tesla Society website is to have those things of Teslas that really give you a touch of what he was going through. So that was quite a time, though. In that particular span of time from the late, I'll say 1890 to about 1930, was probably the biggest innovative time this country has ever experienced. And we talk about those remote-controlled vehicles. They themselves are the shoulders that the remote-controlled vehicles on Mars are using. It's basically the same technology. Of course, now there's a lot more sophistication to it, but how it operates, that part hasn't gone away. So once again, we have Tesla leading the way when it comes to technology. Another thing that he did in 1908 was when he comes up with his first logic circuit. And without that circuit, computers would be so expensive you wouldn't be able to buy them. But he put that into the public domain right from the beginning. So what kind of man is this? Is he so stupid that he just wants to give his whole life away? And the answer is no, he isn't stupid, but some things he just felt were better left to others to carry him even further. But by getting that basic amount of information started, it keeps anybody from claiming exclusivity with the invention.
Mm-hmm.
So, just going from one day to another, if you worked for him and did work for him or you knew him, you'd be going nuts trying to figure out what is he going to come up with next. A popular story that's talked about a lot is his relationship with the pigeon. Are you familiar with that one, Curtis?
I think so, but you'll have to remind me. I don't remember.
Okay. Well, he lived at the New York Hotel. His room was 3327. Now, some of these floors, you can go out, and there's a patio that you'll find right on, you know, at these upper levels. It's just gorgeous, but Tesla had a real inclination to play with this pigeon. He thought that the pigeon itself had possessed a whole lot of knowledge that we don't know about. How they can unerringly go to a specific site, like you know what homing pigeons are.
Oh, yeah.
They just don't miss it. You can take them from England to France and let them go, and they'll be back in their little nest before you get there. So there's something that about them and their navigation system which was of interest to Tesla. But he also fell in love with this little critter. And I can see that, too. You once in a while, you get around like a puppy or a kitten or something like that. Imagine getting around a bird that kind of hooks up with you. Because this bird did make some sort of connection with them. I don't know what it was, but Tesla did a lot. One of the things that he did that was interesting was he put a magnet on the top of the pigeon's head and had secured it somehow, but the poor pigeon could not go anywhere. It lost its ability to track. So what happened? We don't know, but magnetics, again, they play a big part in our lives. There's going to be something in magnetics that you can't get away from every step you take. There is a magnetic impulse in your body that makes that muscle move. There's a thought in your mind, a notion that you have. It's sitting there, but what gets it going is a little magnetic flux. So it goes through your brain, and in the brain itself, it is being processed and expanded on and improved, and all these things are happening in a blink of the eye. But it's a magnetic type of network that sends these messages about our body that we react to. And you take somebody that really has to have keen ability to drive. They've got to have good eyesight. They've got to have endurance, you know, a lot of things. But there has to be something about their own magnetic field in their bodies that makes them just a shade better than anybody else. You know, if you can beat somebody by a second, you can beat them by an hour. Nobody remembers who comes in second, and it's that way no matter what we go into. And if it's in the scientific field, Tesla got into so many, but one of the popular ones that he got into was a pump. When we think of pumps nowadays, we think of these things that have a diaphragm to them and they go by suction and so forth. Tesla had come up with another one that employs no what you call buckets to it. It's just plain, smooth discs that rotate, and they pull the water right on through. So
was that his turbine?
That was a that's in reverse. It becomes a turbine.
I see.
When we think of a pump, it's going in one direction.
Oh, that was his pump, right?
Yeah, but in reverse, it is the turbine.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a piece of beauty, and you know, he thought about converting it into something that would be like a hovercraft or a helicopter. It would be somewhere in that area that he was thinking about. And I guess it's possible with today's materials, but back in that time, there'd be so much iron you couldn't get anything to go anywhere. But at least kind of like Leonardo da Vinci, he had these concepts. He put them down on paper. One of his devices was an airship. And this airship would go at, I forget what it was, maybe 10 or 15 Mach. It was super fast, but how it was shaped is kind of surprising, because we have a new ship that took over for the Blackbird, and they call it the Aurora. And the shape of that Aurora mimics a lot of what Tesla did with his shapes. So it's interesting.
The airship of Tesla's, didn't it look like a big teardrop?
Yes.
Except like a really elongated teardrop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It had a pretty good sized tail on it. But it had something about it that when you talk about airworthiness, it had a shape. Now, one of the things that I think it's akin to is when we talk about an egg, it's one of the best shapes that nature makes. But if you take an egg-shaped object, you can get it to go uphill. You could conceivably run it right up to the top of Niagara Falls. You would need some guidance, a string or something to hold on to it, but it will start a gyration, and it somehow takes advantage of the water through some sort of adhesion that I'm really not sure how it comes in there, but in this film that I saw, it went straight up. They had a garden hose, which isn't much, but they let the water run on it. They put the egg at the bottom, and before you knew it, it was right up at the mouth of the hose. Hmm. So why does that happen? We don't know. But by taking a look at nature, nature sometimes has the cure for what we're looking at or looking for. And Tesla was one of those people that tried to learn from nature, tried to improve on it if he could. But there was just no doubt about the power of nature. And if you can find a way to harness it in any respect, it becomes just like the water system out in some of these states like Washington that have a million rivers and streams and lakes and all that kind of stuff. They put together quite a few hydroelectric systems out there. And because of it, their power at one time was the cheapest and most affordable electricity in the country. And I'll tell you, another place that comes in second is Colorado Springs.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's one thing about we have a municipal power company, but they're really great. They get the latest in technology, and I guess because it's city-owned, they don't go running off on a rate increase every, 6 months or
mm-hmm.
something. But it is why a lot of people chose to come out here. I'm talking about corporate neighbors that they come out because it's got something to offer. And if they can save a few bucks, you bet they're gonna try. So mm-hmm. it's an attraction. Now, I was talking about some of the places that Tesla went to. We talked about Madison Square Garden. But there were other places at that time in New York City where markets were out, and he liked to stroll into the markets. And he got a lot of ideas from the markets. A lot of people don't think about it, but you try to walk through one and tell me you didn't pick up a couple of ideas, because you can't get near one of those without somebody having something new this week that wasn't there last week.
Mm-hmm.
People are innovating, and if you want to see a display of it, go to the market maybe once a month. And in between your stops, you're going to find that you get back there, there's something new, and it happens every time. It happens automatically, and I just started to notice it. I started to do it myself, and then I was going, well, I give 1 month, I'll go back again and see what's happened. And sure enough, there were, you know, maybe two, three good changes that you see. And that could be anything from a different type of table. I've seen tables that flip-flop and go on their back and almost do things that you prevents you from getting your feet tangled up in these picnic tables. They've got one that I saw improved. It was just amazing what happened. But again, what they were selling the month before is nowhere near the quality of the one they have now. So little changes, they happen, and I know that it gave Tesla a whole lot to think about. And, you know, you think about, say from about 18, right after the Civil War. So around 1870 or so is when things started to really hatch in this country. But the most fierce of them all were the carpetbaggers. And these were people that had a little money, or they had some title. And there were some strict rules after the Civil War. But because people had become, they had to become innovative, they got better, and ideas just kept coming and coming and coming. And the nature of the ideas, there is a certain level. You'll find the level where it's maybe the latest car wash device. Well, that has a particular level. It's in there with the lawnmowers and maybe a few other things. But there are millions of people in that genre. That's what they invent, are those handy little items. It's maybe a wheelbarrow, a different type, that comes in. And then you get into the next level. You'll find an inventor that is working with chemicals. And he's mixing chemicals and developing different colors of ink, for instance. It's a category that is much more complex. But you find that there are those people in that same level that are coming about with new innovations that are, again, at a different level. But what Tesla did, He was at the top level from the beginning in electricity.
Mm-hmm.
There was nobody that came near him. Just nobody.
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 Not even today.
No, not even today. And the thing that I was particularly really impressed with was the way he did a Western Union splice. This was after he knocked out one of the power company's generators. And what happened is his big coil, it back kicked. I don't know if the choke was just not suited for it, but it back kicked. and it hit the generator and knocked out power in Colorado Springs. This man went over, rolled up his sleeves, and in 72 hours, he rebuilt the entire generator and spliced a Western Union splice of the heavy power cables that were coming out of the generator before they got melted with this back spike that came about. But in 72 hours, he did it alone. And these generators were about the size of a room, you know, just a whole big type of room. You get a generator that's, you know, over 10 feet tall, 10 to 15 feet tall. That's a big piece of equipment that's coming in. And then, of course, there's the secondary equipment, which is the cooling and so forth. But I'm talking about the rare, you know, the basic generator. Mm-hmm. And, oh, it was so beautiful. I saw this picture of how he did the splice. And you think women know how to braid their hair? The way he did this Western Union splice is a braid, and it's like in 10 different lines that come down, and the way he's weaving them together, oh, it was a thing of beauty.
His mother could tie 3 knots in an eyelash.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, and she rubbed off on him.
Mm-hmm.
When she died, he was in Paris, and he took off right away, and it took him about 4 days to get to his home in Simia. That's where his mother was. And what was ironic about it, he had such a close attachment. It was just so close. But he arrived. She only had one set of words for him, and then she died. And she said, "Finally, you have arrived." And he walked over, he kissed her, and she died. It was just so ironic the way the whole thing came together. But that was his last tie to what we would call Yugoslavia, or at the time we called it the Austro-Hungarian Empire. But that's where he lived at. He got away from those people. And when he died, and, you know, we're going to talk about how he died, but not on this show. Mm-hmm. But there are some things that today I have some written proof that I am going to be putting in my book so you can see it for yourself. But he was spirited out of this country so fast. They had him cremated. They had the big funeral at St. John's Cathedral. And there is still the mystery. I don't know if you know the mystery about the photograph. Are you familiar with that one, Curtis?
Well, I heard there were quite a few engineers in the church at the time for his ceremony.
Yeah.
And they all had their a lot of them had separate cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I heard, several of them took photographs of Tesla in his casket. And I heard that none of the photographs showed Tesla in the casket.
No.
And they were all developed different places. And how could that be, John?
Well, I have a negative of the...
Oh, you do?
Yeah. And I'm going to be getting some duplicates made. I've got a kind of a minch mall of stuff, and I've got to spend about 2 weeks to really get it organized, but... That's a picture I want to put out again, because what is mysterious is the camera is focused down onto the casket. There is the flag display, And they had a coat of arms. It wasn't exactly a flag, but it was a coat of arms. It was the Tesla coat of arms, and it did not come out. This year was almost a deadhead picture, and it's a box camera. There's no way to get focus out on one side different than what it is on the other side. But yet, when they took the picture, the casket was closed, and it was out of focus, the photograph. On the left-hand side is out of focus, and they say that the spirit of Tesla can be... Now, I haven't taken the time just yet, but they say the part that is out of focus resembles or has the silhouette of a man. And this is something that I haven't toyed with yet, but I'm on the verge, and I want to do that because it is so interesting. And back in the day, I would go out and lecture, and I would show some of these pictures, and it would be just amazing how people, when they get the chance to look at it, you tell them what they are looking at, and they have to concede to you that, yes, indeed, there is something strange here. Because the clarity of the picture from, let's say, you know, from dead center and to the right is all nice and crisp. But from the middle to the left, this is where the distortion and the cloudiness, and I don't know, I can't exactly say cloudiness, but blurriness is maybe a better word, of this figure is something that it is enough to keep you up at night.
What size is the negative?
I have the negative on a 3 by, I think it's a 3 by 2.
I see.
Yeah.
So the camera was literally taking a negative 3 inches by 2 inches.
Well, that one, the original was a 8 by 10.
Negative?
Was the original negative. And then after they got the negative, what they did was to downsize it, and it comes out to that 3 by 2, or is it 3 by 4 format that I eventually got from them. And it is quite the interesting piece.
And where did you get it, John?
I got it from a fella out in Chicago. He was an old Serb. And he had a camera shop in one of the suburbs of Chicago. But it had a real strong Slavic influence. Everybody had the Slavic name, and all the women were beautiful and blonde and blue-eyed, and the men were handsome and with the dark hair and the blue eyes, and, you know... Yeah, they're beautiful people, but this is a camera shop, and I had gone in, and I got into the conversation about the blurred photograph, and I had a photograph, but that's all I had was something to pass around, and then he gave me that negative.
Is that a negative that he took, that photograph?
It's a negative that came down from the large master negative. There is a fellow, no, I think his name is Kent something. Tesla had a photographer that took pictures of him throughout his life. And there is a book with approximately If I remember, it's somewhere around 800 or 1,000 photographs of different things that Tesla had this photographer take pictures of. Some of it involved a piece of equipment that he was building. Others were pictures of him at a party, or there's just so many pictures. Now, when Tesla died, there were two of these albums that were kept, and the gal that had worked for Nicholas Kasanovich, that was Tesla's uncle, and he was the ambassador there, the Yugoslavian ambassador. His secretary wound up with the book, and then she gave it to someone else. I can't remember offhand. I don't have my notes in front of me, but I want to get that book and go through it and try to get as many pictures as possible from it. But that book, there's two of them that are identical, but that book is something that I want to put together. I don't know what the cost would be, but I would buy at least one of them, and I would pay a fair price. And I am already saying that the content of the photo albums is so significant that I would like to have it and make it open to the public so they could see just the dimensions of Nikola Tesla.
That would be simply amazing to get a hold of that book.
Oh.
Photographs can be scanned, they can go on the web.
Oh, yeah. What I had seen, I have to get you the name of that photographer that Tesla had, but he followed his whole life through, and it is a compendium of the life of Nikola Tesla in pictures. And if you get a chance, and, you know, if I somehow am able to find it and can recreate it and make it available to everybody, that would be, I mean, Curtis, it's the gold standard.
Yes.
Of Nikola Tesla.
And that book you think is in Chicago?
Well, one of them is at the museum in Belgrade.
I see.
And the gal who had gotten it, she was from Chicago, but she donated it, and I don't know if the donated copy that she had, yes, that's right, the copy that she had, she donated, and it is in Belgrade at the museum. The second copy is owned by the son of the original photographer, and if somehow he's listening, or if I don't have the story right, please let me know. But I would like that so much, and it is so interesting. And it's things like that that we don't want to lose to posterity.
Mm-hmm.
We want to, well, of course, we want to hold on to everything that is precious, and this is precious. So it is such a, in writing this book, it is a pleasure, but it's almost like you can start almost anywhere. And mm-hmm. then if you backtrack a little bit, you find the characters that are crossed Nikola Tesla's life, and powerful politicians, the governor of New York, the mayor of New York, and he is sitting over there in Belgrade. I know this does not make me too popular with the Tesla Memorial Society, who feel that, you know, he should be in Belgrade.
Mm-hmm.
When he spent the major portion of his life here, why should he be there?
Well, he could have moved back to Belgrade at any point in his life.
At any point.
He wanted to stay in New York City.
Yes, and he loved New York City. He was one of these New York City boys.
Mm-hmm.
He was handsome, he was smart, and he was socially revered. When he would walk through the neighborhoods, people go, "Oh, there's Tesla." And if he was in the Slavic areas, I mean, they went. It was like Muhammad Ali. You see how he has a big impact when he walks into a neighborhood. There's people that, you know, just rush to be near him. And that was Tesla in a sense, except he was a mover. Tesla would get out there and he walked. I mean, he walked. And he kept on the move. So if you wanted to visit with him, get your walking shoes on.
Oh, good.
Because he was out there to, first of all, he was in superb condition, but he was such a, he was a busy person. He had a hard time with sleep. His senses were so fine. He could hear a fly lit on a table a room apart.
In the other room.
In the other room.
Mm-hmm.
And this was caused by, in his early life, he nearly died. He became very sickly, and he suffered what there is speculation about it, but the people I have talked to say that he must have had scarlet fever at the time. And the physicians of the time didn't know how to treat that. But your fever goes up and your sensory lobes in your ears and in your vision, they go up to a new level where they have power that we normally don't conceive of. But what they do is they become so sensitive, because it's not just like somebody putting a fork down. It hardly makes enough noise to really disturb anybody. But somebody like Tesla was well aware of it. And this was something that he had to overcome when he was a youngster. His father had him lined out. His father wanted him in the priesthood. His older brother, Marco, who got killed, he was going to be for the military or the priesthood. He was the oldest son. And the oldest son was usually the product of the father. In other words, if the father was a carpenter, the oldest son became the carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked with the priesthood. Well, Marco was tragically killed.
On that horse.
On a horseback. He falls off a horse.
Mm-hmm.
But almost simultaneous with that is a period where Tesla comes down with this fever. And he was so close. His father had started to coach him, was preparing him for a life in, he had his choice, either the military or the priesthood. And Tesla had no interest in either one of them. But at that time, if the father said, "This is what you were going to do," that's what you did.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't like, you know, a 12-year-old kid running the household. It is so strange. So these are the things that they're nice to know. They play a critical part. When you do the summary of all of the things you know about Tesla, that bout that he had with the scarlet fever, it is what caused his hearing and caused his vision to become so acute. When he worked, it was at night. If he was up and around when all the trucks were blaring their horns and so forth, he could never get anything done. Mm-hmm. He was awake, of course, or during those hours, but when he was on a project and he means to buckle down, it would be at night when he would do his greatest research and his experimentation. So he was a man of the people. He was, I feel, stolen out of this country. And it is, if there is anything that I would love to see, I would like to see Tesla brought back to this country and enshrined at Wardenclyffe, where his greatest experiment did not come to fruition because he ran out of money. But he also got, they were deceptive with him. And the problem that Nikola Tesla had is, if anything, he was trusting of people when he should have been cautious with whom he was trusting. He had a lot of people that took things away from him because he had faith in humankind that people would not do that. Yet in the environment and the times that he lived, turn of the century, early 1900s, that's when America was the most innovative. They say now at this period, with what is happening with our infrastructure, there isn't that much left. But they plan to buy and reinvent the new infrastructure. Where we are today is a real advantage in that we can see things that will at one time become something very common, but there'll be this introduction of green technology. There'll be a change in the way we live. Hopefully people will get off of wasting product.
Well, we're sort of out of time. As far as green technology, let's talk about his Pierce Arrow that he put that electric motor in next time.
Well, let's talk about that because I did a lot of research on that.
I want to hear more about that.
Oh, you will, and I'll tell you, it's quite a story.
And I want you to find those photographs.
Oh, I will. I'll get them together.
All right. I hope you can find those, and especially that book of photographs.
Yeah, I can. I know that one is at the museum over there in Yugoslavia, and the other one is by the official photographer, and his son has them, and I think his son would, maybe reproduce some. I mean to look that guy up and talk to him about it because it is so important.
Yes, write that down in the list of things you want to get done.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
All right,
Curtis,
John. Yeah,
Curtis, it's been a real pleasure meeting with you.
It's wonderful having you on.
And we'll look forward to seeing you next week when we continue.
That sounds great.
About Nikola Tesla. Goodbye, Al.
All right. Talk to you later, John. Thanks. Bye.